It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. We're joined today by our good friend and, I think co-host of the show at this point, Penny Rich.
Hey, how are you?
Our chef on staff and county commissioner. And, you know, we want to talk today, Penny, about the government shutdown because, you know, it's probably going to go on for a little while longer. I don't think it's going to go a lot longer.
Yeah.
You know, my hope is that by our recording this show, I will be subject to the embarrassment of doing a show on the shutdown and that it airs after the shutdown is over. Let's hope that.
Oh, yeah. I'm there. Yeah.
Okay. So we have little bottles of water. We will toast to that embarrassment.
Ooh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Delicious.
There we go. We took our sip, so
delicious.
It's going to happen.
That's right. That's going to make it happen. So the shutdown, of course, I think we can just say in one or two sentences is an outright and disgraceful political stunt on the president's part that is being done for his own reasons, really almost completely of ego, but also it's just a desperate effort to hold on to his base politically. He found out that Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter were mad at him about making a deal to fund the government for next year, and then he turned around and said, oh, forget that I agreed to do that 5 minutes ago. We can't do it now unless I have my wall. So there's, you know, the claim of a national emergency and all that. It's nonsense. It's been beautifully, I think, by the way, fact-checked from 25,000 angles.
All over.
Including Fox News,
that's right.
I mean, man, when you've lost Fox News, I think he's done.
He's desperate.
I think he's in bad shape.
Yeah.
When they are calling him out practically in real time and during interviews.
Sure.
With White House staff. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's jammed pretty good on this, and I hope that he's going to embarrass me and my program by ending this week. But just in case he doesn't, we wanted to talk about some of the ways in which the federal government can affect what happens right here in our little county. I thought of this because, you know, I do a lot of work with volunteer and for cash with housing authorities, mm-hmm. which are federally funded agencies. And when I worked for a housing authority full time, several years ago, I think it was during that time, I'm trying to remember which particular shutdown this was. I think it was Ted Cruz's Green Eggs and Ham shutdown, that unless Obamacare was shut down, he would not relent. that really was a bunch of nonsense, of course. But because there was a chance that our agency could see an interruption in the flow of money from HUD to the housing authority, we were obligated to have meetings and have contingency plans to be prepared in the unlikely event that our funding would be interrupted for some period of time. Housing authorities are allowed to have, and at that time, we're allowed to have even larger reserves of operating money. You have administrative money, and you have for the Housing Choice Voucher program, you have HAP money, which is paid directly as a pass-through to landlords. And so landlords right now, I'm sure, are having concerns about whether or not their Housing Choice Voucher payments. So let's just start with that because it's an easy and obvious place to start. My understanding is from the housing authorities that I work with that they are funded through February. And so nobody's, you know, so usually rent payments would go out first of the month.
Right.
So it looks like, you know, obviously they went out for January because, believe me, if they didn't, we'd know all about it.
Right.
And I think they're fine for February, and we will see what happens if we get into the first week or two of February and this is not fully resolved with back payments made and as necessary. Then I'm sure that each of these two housing authorities that I know so well will probably be going to their local governments. They'll be coming to you, and they'll be going to the Durham government and asking for for funds to be transferred so that they don't have to miss payments.
Right.
And then they'll have to have a mechanism for paying that back.
Right.
I don't know what happens in communities that are not as wealthy as ours.
Yeah, and this
that's
is
the thing.
Yeah, and this is a good introduction to what we've been discussing today, as a matter of fact. So you are right. January has been taken care of for the housing vouchers. We did get notice that February will probably be okay as well.
Right.
That notice though hasn't gone out to enough people, so people are
right.
starting to get very, very concerned.
Rightly so.
And it is rightly so. Right now, we don't know if this continues. We don't know about March. So
right.
what happens?
Right.
Exactly what you just said. We are committed to finding money in the county, moving it around to make sure that the housing vouchers do get paid so
right.
people don't lose their homes, so people
right.
can stay in a home. Number one job of a county commissioner or really any elected official is the safety and welfare of the people that live
right.
in your county, in your state,
right.
in the United States.
Right.
The president just doesn't understand this. He thinks this is a big game. Let's shut down
yeah.
the government. He doesn't even go to what a lower level government has to deal with when this happens.
I mean, honestly, to be perfectly frank, I'm not sure that our HUD secretary understands this either, that if those payments are missed, and we're talking about some other county in North Carolina where the local government doesn't have $1 million in reserves
right.
to cover payments or for various programs,
right?
Right? That what can happen is those rent payments are missed, let's say, for March for, you know, the 70, you know, in Orange County, it would be somewhere, you know, it varies every month, but
mm-hmm.
it's about 650 families who receive some level of subsidy, some more than others.
Right.
In Durham, it's almost 3,000 families.
Right, right. Durham
and,
is large,
and this,
right.
In addition to veterans vouchers, VASH vouchers. And so you have all of these people are now in arrears on their rent. Now, most of us know if you don't pay your rent, you know, by about the middle of the month, you're getting a knock on the door.
Right.
And you're going to be evicted.
Right.
Now, landlords, you know, aware of this situation can often, you know, kind of work this out, but sometimes they can't.
They can't.
They can't and, carry
right.
the load any better than anybody else.
Right.
Usually.
And it's interesting you said, you know, counties that don't have $1 million in their back pocket. Well, you know, the interesting thing is we all have fund balances by state
right.
law, right?
Right.
You know this. We have to have
sure.
a fund balance. However, the fund balance isn't there to cover the federal government's—
To back up the federal government.
That's
right.
not what it's there for. It's
That's
to
right.
keep the county running for about 3 months, 3.5 months, whatever it is that
right.
that fund balance is. It's not to cover what the federal government should be
That's
doing.
That's right.
Another thing that I think you're right, that Donald Trump and Ben Carson
right.
do not understand—
Or
is
don't
that
care about.
Or don't care about, is that we're talking about human beings. This is not a game. This is not like, you know, Monopoly board where we're moving pieces around and
right.
you know you're going around the board and seeing if you can collect $200. This is really dangerous. This is not a good thing to do.
It is.
And it makes people folks are already stressed out, right? When you're living in that kind of situation. To put
right.
to put that added stress on people, we know that it affects their
unnecessarily,
health.
Unnecessarily.
It really does.
You know, if you could see you know an emergency or a situation where such a showdown would be justified, to be honest, I'm not sure I can understand what it would be. You know, a government shutdown is almost always a political game of chicken, and it is by its nature an expression of failure.
That's right.
Of political failure
That's
on the
right.
part of leaders.
Yep.
And then it's all about who gets most of the blame for it. You know, and more and more, the numbers are indicating that the blame in this case is successfully being placed at the feet of the person who should own it.
Right.
Who said he would own it, by the way, which was, you know, the fact that the president came out and said that he would gladly, you know, he'll definitely shut down the government for this. He'll take all responsibility for it was an obvious indicator that he had no idea what he was talking
That's
about.
That's right. That's right.
To be honest with you, they should have come in with the butterfly net right then and taken him away because you're not competent to run an organization that big if you don't understand what it means to shut it down.
Right, right. And the continued lack of understanding. And who's advising this person, right? Yeah, I mean, are they all just standing there saying, yes, whatever you want?
Who can?
Yeah, well, that's a good point, too. I mean, you know, there's no telling him what to do. But, you know, the idea that, oh, you know, the federal workers, they're okay, they're fine. We're also talking about people that are screening folks as they're coming in through the airports, as they're leaving the airports.
Right.
You know, this is where we need to be really vigilant, not the border, southern border
next
to Mexico.
That's where the actual security risk is.
Exactly.
Too.
And we're not paying those folks right now. And they're starting to not show up for their job because,
you know? Well, and by the way, I saw some recent reporting about this that indicated that a lot of TSA people who are not coming into work are not coming in because they can't afford the gas to get there.
Right.
You know, they make crappy money anyway.
Right. And the child care.
Yeah. And you can't pay for your child care provider is not going to listen to your, hey, government shutdown. I'm not getting paid. So you're not getting paid.
Right.
That also doesn't work in a restaurant.
Nope,
The ripple effects of this are tremendous. And we know this. And it's not unlike a natural disaster hitting your town. If there's a big power outage over the weekend, it's not just that you can't go out. It's that a restaurant can't be open. And the staff in the restaurant can't make their tip money.
That
affects their ability to make their bills and go out and do things and spend money in the local economy. The ripple effect of that is quite obvious.
Right.
And, of course, that doesn't have back pay for some people, but it's not enough. It's not enough.
Right, right. And there was an article about that today. I think it was the New York Times. I don't mean to be snobby and tell everybody every the New York Times every day, but I do. And there was an article in there that actually said it's not, you know, the effect of this is not like one times or two times. It's more like 300 times and 500 times.
I think that's right.
You don't bounce back from this so easily. You don't make this up. So even though, you know, there will be a bill simultaneously to open up the government and to pay people back pay,
right.
What has it done to their life until they get that back pay?
It pays essential workers back pay.
Right.
The people who are working now without getting a paycheck, they'll get back pay. The other half of the people who are affected, which is about 400,000 workers,
right.
They are under a mandatory furlough, which means that they are away from work without pay. I don't know about you, but I don't know a lot of people who can just say, I'm going to take 3 weeks off without pay.
Right.
Or a month or 2 months.
It doesn't happen.
I'm just going to sit back and chill. Now,
right.
It doesn't really work that way for most people, not these days. No.
Right. So they're not eating.
So,
they're not paying for something.
That's
yeah.
right. So
it, horrible.
We hope, of course, that some of them are listening to WCHL. If you're out, you know, we're glad that you've joined us. We're going to talk a little bit more about the government shutdown, how it affects Chapel Hill and Orange County and the area locally. We're talking with Commissioner Penny Rich. Thank goodness. I'm so glad you're here. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Commissioner Penny Rich, and we're discussing crimes that we'd be willing to commit while we're off air. some of them, you know, are, you know, look, you there are crimes that you'd commit. Let's just say it. We all have crimes that we would commit. Listen, I commit crimes according to the fashion police at least daily. So those are mostly
I'm right there with
those
you.
Are generally misdemeanors, though. But I will tell you that I almost sailed right by a stopped school bus today.
Ooh.
It's just one of these traffic situations that is not the obvious. It's not like a two-lane, one in each direction, and I went to swing around and pass the bus and whatever. It was on Airport Road, and it's you know, like it's five lanes.
Sure.
And you know, the bus stops, and it's not. Yeah, when you see, I see city buses stopping there all the time.
It's not intuitive.
You just go around it. You just don't think of it, and I'm going along, and I come up on this bus, and I realize suddenly that the bus is stopped, and the lights are on, and I mean, I slammed
on your
brakes.
Well, you didn't commit the crime then.
I almost did. I was shocked.
Yeah.
I'm almost a criminal. That would be terrible.
I don't think so.
That would be terrible.
Yeah.
No.
It's that flashing arrow, that amber arrow.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. You know, and of course, you know, the minute I stopped, the lights went off.
Of course.
Of course they did.
They were ready to roll.
Yeah. Did you think that bus driver was looking at me going, go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm tempting
you. Okay, you're going to stop.
But you do know your brakes work, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I just got my brakes done. I said,
excellent.
Oh, yeah, good brakes.
There you go.
I'm not, you know, don't have my nose on the steering wheel or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, but I digress. Yes, the many crimes that I would commit if I had the chance, that would not be one of them.
No.
Yeah, but, you know, so we've talked about housing. Let's talk about food. You know, America lost its collective mind not very long ago about romaine lettuce. Remember that?
Oh, my God.
Everybody was just, like, over the edge about romaine lettuce.
Ridiculous.
So let's not have background checks for guns, but if three people had to throw up after eating romaine lettuce, let's just stop everything in the world. I want to get off.
Right.
So the FDA is not doing food inspections now because they're shut down.
That's right.
So don't you feel good buying all those fruits and vegetables?
Absolutely.
The producers can still inspect, of course. I suppose that they already did.
Maybe. Yeah, I know.
We'll just have to roll with it.
Yeah, we will. Know? Yeah. You know, the more
just
tragic
boil
part
boil everything
that,
before you eat it.
Yeah. The tragic part is people that don't even get to that point, that don't have enough food to even get to the point where they're eating the produce that has been non-inspected.
Because food stamps is going to be affected.
That's right. And, you know, we know that through January, we're okay with food stamps. We're not too sure about February or March right now. Unlike housing, you know, we're not getting that good feeling that they're going to cover the food stamps, sort of SNAP as they're known. So it costs about $1 million here in Orange County to make sure that people eat, you know, on a monthly basis. And we've had the rules change on us a number of times where we did have to supply folks with money until they got used to the new system, and we've done it before. Again, we will find money and we will take care of the folks
that
we want.
Yeah, but that was kind of a fluky situation.
It was
right?
It was kind of weird. There were times that, and again, we got sort of reimbursed and we were able to move that money, so we got that. But
right.
But think about not only the folks that are not going to get the food cards, the SNAP cards, all the people that we are getting federal funding dollars for, our employees that administer this program, are not getting paid.
So there's a number of employees within the Orange County government that receive funds from various grant sources.
That's correct.
Including the federal government. There's
That's
a
correct.
Couple or more in the Housing and Civil Rights Office.
That's right.
Who help administer the Section 8 program, the Housing Choice Voucher program, and many other programs. And they one of the things that they've become very good at is writing grants from the various programs, the home program, and various programs. This is true in Durham, too. And, you know, then, you know, part of your responsibility as a housing authority is to go through and follow the funding line to figure out who you have to tell not to come into work next week.
That's right.
Because of the funding issue. And that's where it comes down to that essential, non-essential issue and whether or not the government's going to be reimbursed, because if they're just furloughed and that's that, then they are legally prohibited from coming into work.
That's right. Yeah.
And this is also a problem, and I know that this affects the Defense Department quite significantly, that you have a lot of contractors.
That's right.
For all different kinds of
and
services.
And the TSA as well. They have backup contractors and folks that are for all.
And they do all kinds of security, not just checking people through at the airport, but also managing the parking lots at the airport and all kinds of stuff out there.
Right.
And how this has to be starting to turn into a grind at the airport and every airport in the country. And it's got to be having a negative effect on business travelers.
I think that's right as well.
It has to.
Yeah, but, you know, once it starts affecting more and more folks in Congress and the Senate, then I think that things change. It's you know, the lower level people to them. They don't care. They just don't care. You know,
it's just not right in front of them.
It's not in front of them. And so what? You know, you miss a meal. What's the big deal? You know, but it's just
kind of funny from these guys, right?
Yeah.
I look at Donald Trump's waistline and I think, who needs to miss a meal?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know, you have the single mom trying to pay for her groceries and keeping her kids nourished. And, you know, the feds just don't even think about that. Or you know what, Gene, you said before, they probably do think about it, but this is a game at this point, right? Who's yeah. who prevails at the end?
You know, I mean, they've got their finger in the wind to figure out, you know, who's going to get hurt the most politically.
Right.
And, you know, my thought about this is that I am absolutely tickled pink, literally, to see Pelosi there at the helm in the House and see the Democrats just so solidly and clear in their message about this.
Right.
Which is to come in and immediately pass the bills. The appropriations that were passed in the Senate just weeks before,
right,
almost unanimously, which is extremely unusual. And that's because Trump had agreed that he was going to sign that.
He was going to sign it, yeah.
Pelosi came right in and pushed him through, and they easily passed.
Right.
And now it's all right back in the lap of the Senate, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
All they have to do is pass that,
yeah.
and then Mitch McConnell's
not going to do it, though. But I just want to...
No, we'll see. There's a lot of people on food stamps in Kentucky.
Well, that's right. But does he really care about running for office again? I don't know. I'm not sure about Mitch McConnell. I do want to give kudos to Nancy Pelosi. You know, I'm not the biggest Nancy Pelosi fan.
Me neither.
I think that she's... You know, I can go either way with her, but I think she is doing a good job.
Yeah.
I think she came in there, and you know, she knows how to negotiate with mm-hmm. fools, and she
yeah.
found the largest fool that she could negotiate with, and she's like, no, it's not going to work. I mean, she just basically laid it out for him, and you know, because he doesn't understand much, he got lost in like sentence number
yeah.
two, and she was on sentence number six.
So it's
pretty sad. But you know, getting back again, we're going to do our best to help folks here, and
yeah.
you know, I know your concern is what about the counties that don't have the kind of money, that don't have the kind of
right.
food banks that we have, that don't
right.
have the congregations, the Meals on Wheels, you know, everything that we can tap into here. Because that's the way we set it up. That's what we wanted our community to be.
Yeah.
We wanted to be helpful to folks that are you know, less fortunate, that need help.
Right.
We don't always think that the government is going to be the one that's going to tempt us to help people, but you know, the federal government. But you know, now we know we have to be ready for this.
Well, that's a great segue, because we're going to come back and talk about exactly that. What is the role of government? And what does it mean locally and regionally? And where do we make our investments and take control of how money is spent on our behalf? And I think you'll find this a very interesting conversation with Penny Rich. We're going to talk a little more about this in just a few minutes. When we come back, you're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back talking with Commissioner Penny Rich, and we're explaining how it is that we're going to get all these, we're going to guide these Republicans to how to get reelected. We can, it's a little counterintuitive, but we can do it.
It is counterintuitive, yeah.
But here's all you have to do to get reelected in 2020 if you're a Republican. Try to remember that you're an American.
That's right.
Okay.
And first.
First. And that you were an American when you were born, probably. And you're probably going to be an American when you die, and it's what you do in between that matters, right? So there's kind of a political wind about how to behave and about how they're all so afraid of Trump and they don't want to go up against him in this. I feel like that's changing. I feel like... It's the emperor has no clothes, which is an awful image in itself.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Sorry. It's family radio.
Yeah.
But you know, I feel like maybe they're starting to figure it out. And, you know, we're not even talking about any of the corruption or any. I actually think that the thing about shutting down the government because you didn't like that you're not getting enough attention or you know, you're just trying to promote chaos, and for reasons that are just without moral standing, I do want to think that there are enough Republicans that are still close enough to the middle of the spectrum that they can be persuaded. And part of my reason for believing that, Penny, is because of the indivisible movement of activists who have really got it figured out about getting in the face of their elected officials. And so if you're listening to this and you're getting a little frustrated and you think, well, okay, what are we going to do about it?
What's the next steps? Yep.
I got to tell you, you can send an email, you can tweet, you can do all these things, and that's all swell and everything. But it's going to be ignored by Richard Burr and Tom Tillis. And these are the two people who we have some say about, who really need to feel the sound of North Carolinians. And they we may not have voted for them, but they represent us.
That's right.
And the Senate is where the logjam is. And if you really want to get their attention, either call their local offices or call their offices in D.C. Tell them that you are a North Carolina resident, that you are a constituent of theirs, and that you want them to reopen the government. That's all you need to tell them.
Right.
They just need to feel the pressure about reopening the government.
Right. And you know, aside from the president, the folks that are in the Senate, most of them know how the government runs.
Yes.
As well as Congress. Even some of these new folks that just got elected and sworn in, you know, that might not have held an office before, they've worked in some sort of part of the government.
A lot
community
of them,
organizing. They worked for someone before. They know how the government works. So you're right. At some point, they're going to crack because their conscience is eventually going to get to them, and they're going to say, wait a second, that's not what I was put here to do.
Right, because they understand about, let's talk about, we were talking off air about what is the role of government. You know, the common complaint among Republicans toward Democrats and progressives is you want a nanny state, you want the government to do everything for you and take care of you and all this stuff. Well, having a person who's a park ranger, who's out there working for the federal government, working 40 hours a week and earning his or her money, this person is not, you know, getting a handout. They're doing a job. And all they want to do is go to work.
Right, because they love their job.
They love their jobs.
But they do want to get paid.
They have to get paid.
Right.
Because their mortgage lender doesn't see it the same way that it's something you should just do for the love of it, like, you know, having a radio show or something.
Sure.
And a lot of these people pretty soon are going to be forced to gain other employment. They're going to have other employment because, you know, they got to eat.
Right. And there's that ripple effect that you're talking about, too. Because what if they go to and do get other employment and they actually like the other employment? Then you have to this whole hiring thing of getting people back to work.
Right. Then you have to restaff a half a million people into the government, probably, or more.
And less experience.
Right.
So you start that from there.
And the president's got a bunch of acting secretaries in his cabinet already.
Right.
And is understaffed in the State Department in DOD, all across government. People are not. The president is saying that they are, but they are not flocking to come work.
They are not
for the Trump administration.
No.
So you know this is a very serious wave effect. This is another wave. The blue wave has hit the Congress, or the pink wave, I'd like to think of it, but has hit the Congress. But this wave is going to be kind of a secondary effect. And it reminds me, by the way, of storm surges. You know, like you have the hurricane that comes through, you have power outages, you may or may not have a second part of the storm that you aren't necessarily even aware is coming because your power's off, you're not watching coverage and whatever. And then here comes the rest of it, right? And it's all the damage that was done afterwards, it's levees that break and all of this kind of secondary stuff that may be days delayed. And I don't think we're going to know until July what the full extent of the damage is economically. But here's my prediction from my little corner of the world. If we're not in a recession by Labor Day, I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah. And I think that's right. I think, you know,
we're already going there.
You go back to what is the role of the government? You know, the role of the government is not to cause the recession, right? The role of the government is, and that's what's actually happening right now, right?
Right.
I think also you're making some really good points about how this is hitting, but I think something that we need to open up our eyes and ears to is that the government is not paying attention to what the next generation wants. And, you know, they when you talk to the younger generation, my kids, about a shutdown, they they're just appalled. They just
they should be.
Right. I mean, they're like, what? What? The adults can't get along. You know,
right.
The adults in the room can't get along, and you're but you want to put the blame on us, right?
So what they say is, whatever you say, don't say that they're acting like children, because children don't do this,
right? Yeah, no, that's what my boys will say too. We would never, you know, the things that we care about, we sit around and we talk about,
right?
You know, like you know, let's go have a beer and talk about it. Let's this constant like, you know, who can come out better? That's not what government does. That's not what we do. So, you know, I mean, you know, you and I touched a little bit on how this is going to hit into. Like, you know, climate change, and if we talk a little bit about transportation, like, what does this mean for transportation? Well, you know what? The government funds a lot of transportation programs.
Yeah.
You know, and we got one coming right here that we're talking about.
Yeah, we sure do. We're going to talk about that. And as soon as we come back, we have one more break to slip in here. We're talking with Penny Rich. Oh, that's an edge of your seat kind of.
Yeah.
That's a tease for the next segment. Oh, I'm so glad you came in today.
Yeah.
We're going to have more with Penny Rich.
It's always fun.
It's always fun.
Yeah.
You're listening to 97.9 The Hill, because why wouldn't you? We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Commissioner Penny Rich, and we're going to get down to it, because now we're talking about the future. And, you know, the future and the Jetsons and I still want my jetpack. You know, look, I went to the World's Fair in the 60s and I saw a guy with a jetpack. And
crazy.
I'm like, where is it,
right?
Where is it? And yet, if you think about, you know, about 5,000 people in Carrborough, let's say, having jetpacks, and just look up and some guy could drop out of the sky and land on you. Well, maybe that wouldn't maybe
not
need
so much.
A little regulation.
Yeah, yeah.
You need
something. Kind of like those bird scooters, but let's not go there.
That
that's
could,
another show. Please.
That could be a problem.
Yeah.
That could be a kid's cue question.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, we were talking about the generational differences between us and our kids. And, you know, I think that my husband is horrified to see that our kids are like, yeah, you know, I have a car. I need one. I have to go places and I need one. But, you know, I'd be fine with not having one. And to my husband, who is older than I am, and to me to an extent, you know, it feels like an aberration, you know, like an insult. You know, like, are you kidding? Are you not an American? You have to have a car. You have to have a great car. You're an American.
Right.
You know, and all of this stuff about our identity is in many ways is tied up in what are we driving? And our kids are not. I don't know how. I guess we just somehow, as a generation, we produced a generation of kids that are not that way.
Don't care.
Just sort of like, yeah, I don't care.
I don't care.
Mm-mm. You know, if there was a bus that came by the house and I could walk to it, I'd be happy not to own a car.
Yeah.
How did that happen? I didn't tell you that.
No. But you know, they can, because they're smart and they came to this on their own and they realize.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think technology also it had something to do with it, because I think that someone would much rather sit on a bus and, you know, look at their phone, get some work done.
Yeah, that's right.
Get the work done, right, before they get to office. But also, you know, let someone else do the driving. They don't, you know. It's also a whole lot less expensive to take public transportation than own a car.
Right.
Owning a car costs a lot of money. Gas costs a lot of money. My kids, I'll tell you, I have one in Greensboro, never even thought about owning a car. Wanted to drive, get his license as soon as he turned,
you know,
14 and a half, he was out there.
Right.
Doesn't even care about having a car. And he goes and visits his brother, who's in Boone. He gets on the bus and he goes to Boone. You know, he has his videos. He has everything he's working on. He's got his computer.
I think you're
there's
right
Wi-Fi
about the
on the bus.
Yeah.
Oh, you know?
Can you believe that? Yeah.
There's Wi-Fi on the Greyhound bus out to Boone. So he's working He's working the whole time. You know, he gets out to Boone, you know, it's dinner time, you know?
Let's
go grab a beer.
Yeah.
So, you know,
don't
there's
have to worry about where to park or
right. So you know, I'm glad you're talking about this, cuz we're in this constant debate here about light rail, right? And sometimes it's there's a lot of good discussion. Sometimes it gets a little bit nasty and personal, and that's when I start bowing out of that conversation because don't do that.
That's not helpful,
okay? No. We've been talking about light rail for 20 years here. This is nothing new. We've been meeting, we've had hundreds and hundreds not thousands of meetings
It's really true.
So it's interesting when people say, well, you're going to have a meeting next week. That's a special meeting. Is that a surprise meeting? No. We do this every month. We grab some coffee. We meet with our Durham County, who's our partner, and Go Triangle, who's a partner. There is nothing hidden.
Yeah.
There is no surprises. There's nothing special.
No.
These are our partners. This is who we talk to about light rail.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, there's controversy a lot about light rail because it's a very expensive project. Public
right.
transportation is expensive. We're talking about a couple of billion dollars, not million, billion.
With a B.
With a B.
Right.
Right? And we're hoping for some federal funding. And in order to get that federal funding, you have to do the best job you can to present your project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're working on right now. We're working
right.
on presenting this to the federal government so we can be hopeful that we get the amount
right.
of money that we need.
And here's part of our generational thing here is that if we say to our kids, it's going to be all this money. Oh, man, that's expensive. And they go, well, yeah, you got a great big government. You have the efficiency of purchasing things through government. You have this, you know, I mean, they've grown up with Walmart, for example.
Yeah.
And with Costco. And with massive purchasing things on a massive scale saves money. And when it makes sense, that's the only way to do certain things.
Right.
There is a reason that only the government can build roads.
Exactly.
If you and I built a road, we might only build roads on the routes that we travel, and we wouldn't care if anybody else wanted
that's
to
right.
use that road.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd get to the end of the county, and if the next county didn't feel like connecting with it, well, too bad.
Right.
You know, just get there and then stop and then walk from there, I guess. But of course, obviously, there are systems like this that require big, massive coordination and enormous investments.
Yes.
And this is the obvious sustainable investment for the long term.
For long term. Long term sustainability.
It's hard to think that far out.
But you know why? Because having a vision is so important.
Yeah.
But not everybody has a creative mind to think of that vision. And, you know, I'm really happy that Durham is our partner on this. They reinvented their downtown. Now, they are having some problems with gentrification, so I'm not giving them
100%.
And that's real.
It is real. But they're looking at it, and they're talking about it all
exactly,
the time.
Exactly. But they had this vision of reinventing what is happening downtown. And, you know, a lot of folks lost their political jobs because of that vision. Some folks didn't. The folks that prevailed kept that vision alive.
Mm-hmm.
And look at it now. I mean, you know, Durham is just unbelievable. The past 20 years,
I mean,
unbelievable.
It's amazing.
So if you don't think about the future and sustainability and moving people around, you know, you and I were talking between the break. We will continue to grow, but we will only grow so much if we do not have the right kind of
mass transit.
To
system.
Move people around.
You have to. You
right.
have to have it. And let's talk for just a minute about the light rail plan, as it's currently configured, is basically one route between Orange County and Durham.
Right.
It's pretty much a straight line. But we were talking about why doesn't it, you know, it, will it and can it branch out into other routes, including the first and most obvious route of going out to RDU? And you told me something I've not heard before. Please tell that to me again.
Right. So it's not that GO Triangle and the partners have not looked at getting to RDU. RDU has not been a willing partner to allow a light rail to stop at RDU. And why is that? It is because of the rental cars. They make a tremendous amount of money when people get off the plane and get into a rental car. Every car that's rented, RDU gets money from, and a large sum of money.
Right.
So why would they want to give that up? They don't want to. So they've never allowed us to even talk about putting a station in the airport. It's backwards. It's just not the way to continue a comprehensive transit plan, which includes planes, right?
Right.
It's buses. It's, you know, it's
planes,
bicycles.
Trains and automobiles.
It's everything, right? You have to include that. So the idea that you know, we hear over and over again, we're ignoring the airport. No, we are not.
No.
We've been trying to get into that airport for, I guess, over 20 years. They will not budge on this. Eventually, I think they will. Now, you can take the GO Triangle buses and get to the airport. That takes a little bit longer. But yes, absolutely, a direct line on a light rail, like in Seattle or you know, any of those places, or even taking the BART right into the airport. You know,
exactly.
It's the way. In D.C., you get off the plane, get right on the metro. You know, but it's really, what you said is really important, this sort of straight line. And everyone complains about, well, you know, it's not going to downtown Chapel Hill, it's going to the hospitals and it's going to campus. I did a little bit of rough estimating. There are 25,000 people that work in the hospitals and on campus.
Right.
25,000. That's not including the students.
And a lot of them live in Durham.
It's right. It's not including the students.
Right.
So what are you talking about? You're talking about moving that amount of people around every single day.
Right.
You know that in an hour, 84 buses stop in front of the hospitals.
Wow.
In 84 different buses.
Each hour. Yeah.
And
so that's probably at its capacity.
We can't move it. And if you don't believe it,
try to drive in there.
At 7 o'clock. Yeah. Wait, the shifts change at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock morning, 7 o'clock at night. You know, if you have that doctor's appointment at 7 o'clock in the morning, you try to get in there with all those buses.
I've had that appointment. It's not fun.
It's not fun. But, you know, again, you're talking about sustainability in the future. Our children, the generation, the 20s, and even the 30s generation, when we start talking about light rail and these arguments come up, they look at us like, oh my God, how does this even happen that we have this? And you know, it's always about money, right? The conversation is always about money, mm-hmm. and it's the billions of dollars, and we don't want this and we don't want that, and mm-hmm. you know, I don't want this in my backyard, and I don't want the romp here, and I don't want that. It's just such an interesting conversation when you listen to young people talk in the next generation, and that's why in Congress it was so important to get these young ladies in there, and I'm so thrilled that they're there.
Yeah, and I'm
so
telling you. Yeah, you want to look at just for fun. You ought to look at what the tax rates were in the 50s and in the early 60s when the higher income brackets had these very, very high tax rates.
Right.
Look at where the middle class was during those times. We had a thriving, stable middle class in this country, and we had that because the super rich were paying more. A lot more for taxes in order to subsidize the development and the stability of the middle class.
Right.
And on that note, this is how we solve the whole thing, is tax the rich. And I can say that, Penny, because it's your name.
Ah, there you go.
No, it always comes down to that. Well, thank you again for
thank you. This has been
this
a great
another
conversation.
Electrifying hour for us.
Absolutely.
And you know, come back often.
Let's do it.
Always. Thank you so much, Penny Rich. And everybody go out and have a wonderful weekend and tax your friends.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.